The show is made possible in part by its supporting sponsors. Blue Water Power Group of Companies, Joe's Discount Tire, and AskGuy.ca. And every week, I know I repeat myself, but I love the spaces that I get to come into. I'm in this wonderful home with my friend who I haven't seen in a while, Anita Trussler.
Nice
Thanks
to see
so
you,
much
Dave.
For welcoming me in this wonderful space here in your home. And agreeing to talk to me, because, you know, sometimes people go, I don't know, like, what are we going to talk about, right? What's he want to talk to me for?
Yep.
What's my story? And you kind of had all those questions going through. But you've done a lot in the community here in Sarnia. We're going to go back to the beginning. Are you from Sarnia originally?
I am. I've lived in Sarnia since I was about 6 months old.
Yeah.
Went to Oakwood Public School, which is now the park over by Baxter Park,
yeah.
Before going to Lake Road School, Northern High School, and then left the city
were
for
you
several
a,
years.
And were you a preppy? Is that what they
no.
called you back in Northern? Were you one of those?
No, I was the Dutch girl with the single working mom, not the preppy one. Did some sports, basketball and track, played the saxophone in high school.
Oh, wow.
Had a fun group of friends, have some great memories.
Do you still play the sax? Do you have one?
I don't, because I just had the saxophone from when I was in school, and then of course when I was done I had to turn it in. So I haven't really pursued that. I think I traded in the sax for my bike.
We're gonna get to that for sure. But you said you went away for a while.
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
So I went to university, to the University of Waterloo. Took a health studies course there with co-op, and the cool thing with co-op is it took me to several different cities. So worked at the Oxford Regional Center in Woodstock. I lived right in downtown Hamilton for a 4 month term. Then I went to Orillia and worked there for 8 months. I loved it up there before graduating. And during that time, I met my wonderful husband.
Yeah.
So I kind of gravitated to where he was. And so we lived in the Newmarket area, just north of Newmarket for about 5 years. So Ryan is an accountant. He has that boring job where he crunches numbers all day long.
I know, the numbers thing. I could never do that.
He didn't go into accounting. He got a bachelor's degree in economics, but then he went to become a CGA certified, which is now really CPA across the board. Yep, and he's now with Steves and Rosemar.
Awesome.
Here in Sarnia.
Both of you have a busy life.
We do.
And a family.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's talk about the family?
So, two boys. I actually have a 25-year-old son. It's crazy that they're adults now, and a 23-year-old son.
Right.
My 25-year-old is actually in Albania right now.
Wow.
Him and his new fiance, they just got engaged. They are traveling 20 countries in 5.5 months. So they've just kind of, they're finishing their European stint. They started in England on October 2nd, have worked their way through. They fly out tomorrow to Istanbul, Turkey.
Wow.
Spend a few days there before they go to Vietnam for a month.
Oh,
and then they're going to finish their adventure in Thailand.
I have to talk to them because I want to go to Thailand and stuff. And what was that for them? Is this just something they said, we just want to do it while we can? Or was this...
I am so excited that they took this opportunity because so many people never actually have the courage to say, let me do this. So Jake's fiance, Mallory, we absolutely love her. She has a passion for travel.
Mm-hmm.
She's just completed her master's in clinical psychology or developmental psychology, and she's applying to do her PhD. So it was a really good time to take a trip, take a pause before they really anchor their roots.
Yeah.
Jake has been working for Royal Bank. And has moved into wealth management. So most of his job is remote. And the bank was wonderful and gracious enough to grant him a 6 month leave.
Wow.
To give him the opportunity to travel and then come back. So
they must really like him.
They must like him, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and then our other son, Alec, he's actually home with us right now. I've kicked him out of the house tonight, but he's doing his MBA at Dalhousie. So he's moved out to Halifax, but he's home doing an 8 month practicum through his MBA program. With called Ivy Charging, which is a division of Ontario Power or Ontario Hydro, which is really looking at the infrastructure for charging stations for electric vehicles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he's doing kind of the business case side of that.
Everybody's busy, and it sounds like they're doing what they want to do. And
Mom
and Dad have encouraged this, I'm guessing, because knowing you and I have, you're very positive-oriented encouragement, and why not, and... I'd like to embrace challenge are they getting all this from you, or is it a little mix of both mom and dad there?
Definitely a mix of mom and dad.
Yeah.
Both families, lots of support. Both boys did a lot of sports, enrichment activities and stuff growing up, and I was always that parent who always said, I'm never going to boast about my kid, and I should never hear from my kid how great they are. I should hear it from other people who tell me what a great kid they are. So, we love this community. I mean, we moved back here when my son Alec was literally 7 days old.
Wow.
So when we were living in the north of the GTA, it was a rat race, trying to...
Isn't it still?
Still is, which is why we moved back here.
Right.
It just felt like my entire life was, you know, going to work, coming home, dropping my child off at childcare, feeding them, putting them to bed, and I didn't get that developmental time with my kids. Mm. So we made the decision to move here, and at that point in time, my husband got a job with Woodbridge Foam, which is no longer here. And it's been a great move. So we've been here for 23 years. And it's kind of nice because my husband's not originally from here, but I would say... he's probably somewhat even more connected to the community now than I am, which is great.
Yeah, I've interviewed a few people up to recently that moved here from another city and said, gee, I really like Sarnia. And I was like, well, it's nice to hear somebody not from here say that. And what do you think it is about Sarnia that has made you and your husband decide to this? Why would we leave? Like, we're staying here.
For me, it's the water. I'm a Pisces, and the calming of the water. And here in Sarnia, we have so much access to water. So when I lived in, we actually lived in Sharon, just north of Newmarket, 15 minutes from Lake Simcoe, but it was all privately owned property and you didn't have access to the waterfront there.
Right.
Here I can go all day long. I have free access to incredible waterfront here. The lack of commute, I think for Ryan, what he really likes is he's a member at the golf course. The golf course is literally 5 minutes from our house.
Yeah.
His drive to work is maybe 6 minutes. He could ride a bike to work. It's fantastic. And the difference here I find from the GTA is you really get to know your neighbors. So people stay and play in Sarnia. You come home from work and you're on your boat, you're on the beach, you're on the golf course, you're at a backyard barbecue within 5 minutes of getting home on a Friday night. Whereas in Toronto, people are, it's that mad dash to the cottages, to the weekend getaways. Here we're really connected. We have an incredible neighborhood. Great, great neighbors. We call ourselves actually the Jimmy Hood.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, we do. Okay. And we have meals together and it's, you know, lots of social time and it's just fantastic.
Yeah. I'm right there with you when you talk about it. And I'm not even a big beach guy. We have some of the nice beaches here, but you can really get anywhere and 15 minutes, that's the busiest time, hit all the red lights on the way home, and it doesn't feel rushed. And
you can always find a parking space.
You know,
I go to Mississauga, and I've got a circle and circle, and you never know. Yeah.
Even downtown, I know some people complain about that. It's like, really, you can park over there and walk down the street. You know, there's still easy parking, free parking, that sort of stuff. I want to go back a little more into school. Like, you said you were involved in a lot of sports and stuff, but on a social level... how was that for you? Let's start like high school.
You know what? High school, I found high school was hard because I was that kid who from grade 7, I think I was already 5'10".
Right.
Curly hair. So not your typical looking student.
Girl.
So always really teased. Like my nickname growing up, I mean, we all have a nickname from growing up, but mine was Fuzzball, right? Because I had Fuzzball.
Yeah.
And that really stuck with me. So I think I was kind of self-conscious. And it's funny because when I look back, some of my teachers would say, oh, you're so tall. Like you're so, you know, oh, we think you're beautiful. But for me, it was always, you know, I felt so awkward and so different from everybody else. Mm. I think so many teenagers go through that.
Sure.
And I wish if there's one thing I could do, I wish I had the wisdom that I have now and the confidence that I have now when I was a teenager. Yeah, I'm sure we all say that,
and
right?
Now, because nowadays someone would kill to have your naturally curly hair, right? So it really comes out perspective-wise at our age, right?
You know? Yeah, and it's funny because as an adult, I would say, you know, if I'd go away on a girl's weekend with friends and whatnot, it was because of my height and my unique hair that I would oftentimes get free drinks from people.
And
the grocery store people want to come up and touch my hair. And wow, like the one thing I wish I could change about myself when I was younger is the same thing that makes me unique today.
Yeah, for sure. And, well, I guess we learn to grow over time. Hopefully some of us do, not all of us do, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say high school was, you know, I had a close-knit friend group, but I wouldn't say that I was the popular kid, but I kind of, you know, I had friends. I worked hard. My parents are European immigrants. They immigrated here from the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. So for me, my entire life was about school and having a part-time job and trying to balance my sports and not having a lot of free time to do other stuff, and really not having the money. Like if I ever wanted something, I had to pretty much get it for myself, right? Yeah. And I understand that now. I really appreciate the way my parents raised me, but certainly as teenagers, we all don't appreciate our parents and don't agree with them.
It's too bad we can't do it the other way around.
I know, I know.
Learn and listen and do as you're told and all that stuff. And you said, so part-time job, what did you do in high school?
My very first job, you're going to laugh at this one, was Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, wow.
The one over on like Colburn and Campbell. So I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah, and then I worked in a clothing store, but I always did lots of volunteer work too. So for many years I worked, back then it was called the Rotary Center, now it's Pathways Center for Youth.
Right.
I did hydrotherapy with developmentally disabled youth, children and youth, and that was really rewarding. Did summer camp programs with them. So that's something that's always been huge to me is volunteerism and connection to the community. My parents were scout and cub leaders in the community. So as a kid, I was the girl who was always, I mean, I was jealous of the boys because they had Ipperwash. They had Attawandran, which is just such a beautiful park. And girl guides at the time that I went, we would go to a camp, which was near Arcona, and we would have to basically do housekeeping while you're camping, which to me was no fun. The guys got to do orientation and stuff. So I used to go and hang out at the Attawandran with my parents all the time and just loved that. So,
and that was different times, right? You know,
it,
women in their place, men in their place, and that's evolved over time, I think. Let's talk about that a little bit, though. Like, you know, the place for women and the place for men. Where are we right now in your mind with that?
I think we're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
We're not all the way there. Mm-hmm. But I think there's other complexities just in terms of gender identity, in terms of, I think we just need to be a welcoming space for everyone and anyone who wants to belong. I think that's the answer. I don't think we have to categorize people into to certain spaces.
Yeah.
And until we get there, I think, so I don't think we're there yet, but I think we've come a long way. And it probably depends on the circles that you're within, right? So
yeah, for sure.
I'm sure there's some context or some settings where they haven't evolved as much, but certainly, I mean, I come from a background in public health, and doing a lot of work with community groups. Yeah. So I see a lot of equity and diversity being really built into what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't really say much about scouting because I'm not as connected to that anymore.
Yeah.
I do still see there's challenges in sport where I see, you know, firsthand knowledge of teams here where there's a hockey team that has maybe two or three girls on the team, and there's no dressing room for them. So they go off to tournaments, they're put in a broom closet. Like, we see that fairly commonly. But I am now seeing, I mean, even the city of Sarnia, I think I was watching part of the council meeting yesterday and did see that there was a report around ensuring that they had gender-neutral change rooms and they were kind of adapting to meet some of those needs. So, again, we're getting there.
It's a long way to go for sure. And there's so much that goes into that, right? You know, because, like, I tease, right? And I don't know, like, I have an idea where I'm at with it. I'm not sure that I know exactly where I'm at with it. Only because we've just been conditioned to grow and accept, you know, there's the men's room and the women's room, and that's just how it is, and so on and so forth. But, like, I don't get invited to a baby shower.
Oh, see? Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. But my son's generation is they don't really have necessarily, unless maybe the second generation wants to host a baby shower. I'm finding a lot of them are more diaper parties, gender reveal parties, things that are the entire kind of cohort of friends rather than just girls only. So, yeah, it probably just depends.
Are we sensitive enough to it? Like, I mean, outside looking in, are we? Yes and no, I guess, would be the answer there because we're not all the way there. But are we sensitive to it or are we ignorant to it, I guess, would be another way to put it.
I think both, and I think that's on an individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm the person to answer that. I think for me, the right thing to do is learn, ask questions, try to understand if you ever do something wrong, understand what you did that was inappropriate or wrong. But I think it's a matter of perspective. I can say, you know, and I think it's a generational thing. Each generation is more accepting. There's a lot of education that I do with my father-in-law. We joke about it all the time. And even my parents sometimes around, you know, appropriate terminology, that kind of thing. Yeah, I think it's really on a case-by-case
Well,
basis.
And the generational thing is, and I'll go out on a limb here, and I'll say, for example, like Jennifer's family, they're Dutch as well.
Oh, yep.
And the dad, we call him, you know, he would say, hey, do you know so-and-so? You know that Polish guy down the street? He might not say Polish guy. He would use the term. But that was just natural conversation. And I've said it here on the show before, you know, like, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. When the teacher was standing right there when I was in public school, and it was okay because we went home and we watched Archie Bunker that night. So media plays a big role in how we feel about things or see it too. Would you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you look at what we watched back then, right?
Good times.
Compared to now,
Couldn't get away with
Sanford
Archie.
And Son.
Archie could, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Jeffersons. Oh, my goodness. George and his white friend.
Moving on up. Moving on up to the top.
So I guess that's... who decides what's acceptable, I guess, is what I've always thought. Like, you know, like, individually, like you say, well, that's okay with me. And we have public conversations.
Yep.
And then we have private conversations. And often those two conversations aren't the same.
Yeah.
And I guess it's... that's an integrity thing, I guess, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm curious, Dave, to know, we've learned so much as to what they did wrong in the past, colonization and all these things.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know 100 years from now what they're going to say we did wrong, right? Like we think
Nothing.
We're doing stuff right, but it's like, what are they going to say that we've done today that's, you know, down the road they're going to say, I can't believe they did that. That was so wrong.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we're not inflicting trauma. I'm hoping we've learned from the past, but.
There was a time when we didn't realize that smoking a cigarette was bad for you too.
It's time the doctors recommended
it. We just did.
Pregnant women, if you don't want to gain too much weight,
I remember the doctor sat in front of me when I was a kid and having a cigarette talking to me.
Ironically, you know? we have pictures in the archives at Lambton Public Health of the Board of Health meeting around the table with an ashtray and half of them smoking. So, I mean, we've seen the pictures
Hypocrites,
of doctors in doctors'
say, right?
offices smoking in the office, right? It's
And that kind of becomes a monkey see, monkey do.
Yep.
You know, what we project off, you know, like I was a smoker for a lot of years up until about, I think, 9 years ago.
Good for you.
And now, but I'm that horrible ex-smoker, like all my buddies, I tell them, I say, you're still doing that stupid thing, are you? And, oh, yeah, shut up. But, you know, it's out of love and all that. But, and now, like smoking, if you're a smoker, you're a minority.
You are.
And you're shunned almost. You're
but
like,
you know what the new tobacco is? What's become so normalized? No, it's alcohol.
Mm.
Like, I look at social media. You're talking about social media. Yeah. And how many memes and videos do you see of a mother trying to raise her children, pouring an entire bottle of wine into her coffee cup? Running down, you know, to the neighbor's house with her giant, you know, bottle of wine. It just
wine
seems
day.
To be so normalized. And I'm conscious of it now, too. Mm-hmm. I say to my husband, when we have friends over, we oftentimes will offer, you know, would you like a drink?
Yeah.
And I'm like, we need to make sure that we're giving people options outside of alcohol as well. Mm-hmm. And it seems like now the social context of getting together for anything anymore is let's go for a drink.
Yep.
Whereas before it might have been, you know, often, I think before it was more let's go for a coffee. I think that's how Tim Hortons kind of evolved, right? The coffee shop and let's have a conversation.
I still
so
like
that's
to
what
have
concerns
a good beer
me.
And whatever and have fun. And
But
I come from the bar world originally too, so I was in that every day, right? So it just became... The habit of my surroundings.
Yeah.
If I wasn't in the bar business, I might still drink, but not every day.
Yeah.
I might, you know. And I interviewed somebody the other day, and they said, would you like a Snapple? And I was like, oh, my goodness. I haven't had Snapple in forever.
That's like an iced tea.
And
right?
Yeah. It's this peach/tea stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And... it's amazing. Go get some. And I'm not endorsing Snapple by any means. Or the water.
Yeah.
But we're having water. Well, you got water.
Your glass is...
What's mine?
So I picked this one specifically for you.
Okay.
Moon River. So we have a family cottage up in the beautiful, beautiful Moon River, Muskoka, in Valla, Muskoka. And then, of course, talking about... I've got the Retro Molson Canadian glass with water.
Well, that's good. There's so much... and I appreciate you sharing that because... I don't think we don't talk about this enough, this whatever this is, and and the for fear of being wrong or saying the wrong thing. I do that all the time here on the show. I'm really conscious about some things that I want to say, but will I offend somebody?
Yeah.
Have we gone too far with that one?
I know what my father-in-law would say.
Yeah?
He has a very strong opinion about that. We can't worry about that. Mm-hmm. But I personally want to be as inclusive as possible and don't want to offend people. But it's oftentimes to the expense that I'm offended, too. Mm. So if I look back to, you know, I'm very respectful of other people and their boundaries, but I've had other people try and push their belief systems.
Onto you.
And when I think of, you know, the most current one that still completely sticks out of my head is just the anti-vax movement. And when we were, you know, tasked with, you know, trying to, you know, protect people, I respect people. If you don't want to get vaccinated, that's fine. But when we had anti-vaxxers showing up at our clinics trying to frighten children and question people who were trying to access the clinics, to me, that's wrong. You have your belief systems. You want to believe your science. That's fine. I have an old friend from school who has, you know, we haven't really seen much of each other since our school years, but he lives in the neighborhood. He came to the clinics, and he's a true anti-vaxxer. So he actually shows up at my doorstep. Trying to, you know.
See that right there. Whoa, let's just pause for a minute. Like, and just to give a background so that we know Anita knows what she's talking about. You work with Lambton Public Health.
Yep.
And you were like a forefront in the vax clinic. So just tell people who you are a little bit with that.
It's pretty cool actually, because I am not a nurse, but I work at Lambton Public Health. My background is more around community development, health promotion, chronic disease prevention. I actually started working in tobacco. And I was really motivated to do that because my mom smoked my entire childhood. She actually quit smoking when I went to university because she just didn't have that pressure on her. When the pandemic came, though, we were all reassigned to different roles.
Yeah.
And I think I was kind of tasked as being a doer, someone who's well connected in the community and can get something done quickly. So we had, within 10 days, we converted a hockey rink into a mass immunization clinic. And I think that doer model was able to kind of build those relationships with the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, with Bruce Power, looking at what else, who else is doing what. We actually got funding, you know, sponsorship funding from Enbridge because they wanted the faster we could get the clinics built, the faster we could get people back to work because workplaces were hurting.
Yeah.
So it was a phenomenal opportunity for me to be able to build and really co-lead a mass immunization clinic where we vaccinated, you know, anywhere from 12 to close to 1,500 people a day, six days a week. Probably one of the most memorable things I can say I've ever done in my career that was impactful. The most memorable was actually before we opened the clinic. I also had the privilege, absolute privilege it was for me, to be the person from public health who was able to work with our long-term care homes. And I was there when we administered our very first dose of COVID vaccine at Trillium Villa Nursing Home.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was just a phenomenal experience. It was emotions, it was tears, because it just seemed like there was finally a light at the end of the tunnel.
And congratulations to you and your team. I remember going there and getting vaccinated. I think I came by and interviewed you guys or something too. And that was interesting because that was one of my first in-person interviews. Or did we do? No, we did that remotely, right? That was one of my first.
Well, we did one of the ones.
Yeah.
It was remote because I think we just built and I was up in the upper part giving you the profile of the entire arena.
Yeah,
and it was remote, yes.
And then it was shortly after that I came in to get my vaccination. And I was just so impressed by, because I remember going down there to get this and thinking, okay, I know they're going to be as organized as they can because there were so many challenges at that time. It was so organized, so it seemed, and very smooth running, and the volunteers were, hi, welcome, and okay, you need to go over there, and then the next one was, okay, now you go over there. It was very directional and simple and very processed, and I felt like nobody likes going to a hospital to begin with, and that, you know, that kind of thing. Nobody likes getting a needle and all that stuff. And I've been getting needles since I was little for blood work and stuff. And I was like, just that's it.
Yeah, and you know what?
And away I went on my day.
We can't take credit for that either. We can take credit for taking a model and implementing it here, but I give all of that, the logistical planning of that, the Hockey Hub model, yeah, was something that Bruce Power had their logistics experts coordinate.
Oh, is that right?
They opened the first one up near Owen Sound.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yeah.
And then, so that's when we worked with the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. They were mm-hmm. looking to do, to help other communities. And they identified that Lambton, when we had kind of reached out to them to learn from their model, to see if that was something that we could do here, they identified that most of the workers at the Bruce Power plant up near Kincardine actually are graduates from Lambton College. And that they're grateful for the knowledge and the experience that comes from our community. So they jumped right on board, and they didn't have to, but they actually funded part of that. Bruce Power provided actual dollars to help make that happen, because there was all the...
And as quickly as you did.
As quickly.
Well,
like,
right?
Like I say, 10 days.
Like overnight, really.
It was within 10 days that there were people skating on the ice till we had a fully functional clinic. And the logistics of it was timed right down to 1 minute per immunization.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's how we knew we would schedule appointments. Each line had 15 chairs. And then
that's why when I came through and I said, hi, how's it going? You were like, hi, Dave. Oh, my God. He wants to talk to me and it's going to talk to me
exactly.
forever. But you moved me along. Way to go.
You're killing us.
You're killing my minute here. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So now that you know a little bit more about Anita and your position, now let's go back to the doorstep here. And somebody, like, to me, that's just already crossing the line.
Yeah.
That's like going and knocking on a fireman's door or a police officer or anybody that outside of their...
It was tough, and I never felt personally threatened. I mean, I know he would never harm me, and he truly believed what he was reading.
Right.
And I would try and say to him respectfully, I respect you as a friend. We grew up together. However, your science is very different than my science. And if that's what you want to believe, that's okay. But... you know, I'm going to believe my science and this is what I've learned. So, I mean, it hasn't happened in a long time, but then also I think the pressure of the pandemic, and I recognize there were a lot of fears from the pandemic. We had people coming into our clinic who had legitimate fears that the government had put, you know, little devices into the vaccine, and they wanted us to be able to, they wanted to hold coins up to the vaccine to make sure that there weren't magnetic properties in the
Bitcoin.
Vaccine. Oh my gosh, yeah.
And I don't mean that, sorry, I don't mean to laugh at those, I'm not laughing at those people, but you know, sometimes you kind of go like, you know, we can maybe get into the government a little bit more if you want, but to hear somebody in your position share that story and tell me they mm-hmm. really believed it. Like mm-hmm. it wasn't just like a negative person that wants to run around and complain. This was legit stuff, eh?
And we talk about in public health, and the World Health Organization has even said this, that one of the biggest threats to the future of public health is this non-validated science, similar to, you know, we've heard the whole Trump's look, the fake news, because anyone can post anything. You know, we've seen that with a lot of nutritional products that someone will claim to be a doctor mm-hmm. and everyone will believe it.
Well, so anybody can go register a .com. I've always said anybody can register a domain name and write about whatever they want so far. I remember being sent messages like the cure for COVID into my inbox and everything. And I would go, oh, okay, whatever. But it got so crazy. For me, someone public that they, I don't know, they think I'm the news guy or something. And I finally had to go on my show and say, stop sending me this stuff. Because I've already got the cure for COVID. I'll sell it. You know, like sort of ha-ha. But then I would get messages from people, say, are you not taking me serious, David? And I was like, I didn't know how to take you. Like, you know, I thought maybe you were messing with me. And nope, they were serious too.
Yeah.
They watched it on somebody's .com and said... whatever they want to say. So that really, in my world, probably your world too, or Lambton Public, a lot of people's world, how did we filter out, or how did Lambton Public Health and World Health Organization and all these, you know, governed bodies filter out the crap?
You know, all we could do, I mean, everything we do is from an evidence based.
Right.
We would have many people come to our clinic and ask those questions, and some people legitimately, once we spoke to them and took the time to explain to them, they would make the decision. But I would always say to an individual, if you're not comfortable getting the vaccine, you don't, like, we're not here to force you. Right. You have to consent to getting the vaccine. I actually had a few people say, well, you have to give me the vaccine, but I'm not going to consent to it. And I say, well, we're not giving it to you without your consent.
Right.
But they wanted, and this was when it was mandated, right? So in the beginning, it was the people who truly wanted it, the vulnerable people in the community who, this means I get to see my grandchildren again, like the tears, the cautiousness, the people coming in with hope. And then the government did the mandates. You cannot go back to work. You cannot travel unless you're vaccinated. So that's where there was a lot of anger.
That's, well, because the government stepped in. Yeah. As soon as we hear the G word.
Yeah. And ironically, like for me, I guess the way my brain works, there are people who, you know, they're worried about what are the ingredients in the vaccine and what is it going to do with me? And this is the same person that we've been waiting, you know, 10 minutes for because they were hauling a few smokes outside in the parking lot. And I'm thinking, do you know
what's
going on? Yeah, like there's just so many poisonous chemicals in your cigarette that you're willing to smoke a pack a day, but you're concerned about one dose of vaccine is going to do to you.
That, the smoking thing,
but it's all a matter of perspective. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll say it. What's in that hamburger that you're eating, whatever you
know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, wow, we could probably
do
a whole bunch of, we're going down a rabbit hole now, but no, that's, because I've gotten a perspective off the record, so to speak, with a few people in public health and stuff that were really like, oh my God. And then I had to go home and have my own life on top of you were dealing with everybody else's life, kind of, and constantly hearing the word. Like, I was wondering if I was even going to bring it up here today because you probably heard it so much you could care less if you ever hear it again, right?
Well, it was funny because it was a period of time, you're right, you worked long hours, tiresome hours.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, my kids are adults, so I can't imagine what it was like for people who had kids having to learn from home, people who couldn't leave the house, a family of, you know, four, sometimes a family of 10 all trying to work from home. Mm-hmm. My work was not at home. My work was in the field because we were trying to work through the pandemic. But I do know, like, even when I would come home from work and try and disconnect from that all, you would have all those people just on Facebook Messenger, you know, friends and legitimate friends.
Yeah,
and
I
get it.
You
they're looking
help.
For expert advice. But, oh, hi, you know, we just tested for this. What should we do? Or, you know, do I need to do a test? And my mom wants to know this. And, you know.
And you're a caring person, so you want to help.
Yeah. I mean, I even had relatives from Holland who I just love who were visiting. They had come to Canada. And I was actually on vacation at the time at the cottage. I was just about to go to the Quay de Bala to go see. I can't even remember who it was that we're going to go see in concert. Just about to hop on the boat. And the phone rings. They're in crisis there in BC, and one of them tested positive. Now they have to quarantine in Whistler. And and I'm like, well, you need to listen to what public health is telling you in British Columbia, because it's going to be different from here. These are the things that I can tell you. But it's just funny how it just comes full circle.
Mm-hmm. All right, enough of that one for now. Let's switch gears to something more fun, which I know is close to you, and it's cycling.
Yes, I was hoping you're going to go to biking.
Yeah, well, of course we would. And your involvement with Grand Fondo. But let's go. How did you get into the cycling thing?
You know, I think I come by it naturally, being a Dutch girl. So my parents are Dutch.
Fair
Every
enough.
Time I went to Holland, it's just so easy to bike there. It's the way to do everything. And if you've ever been to the Netherlands, I mean, that is the only you have to do it by bike. So I just love biking. I never was into competitive biking. I always loved getting from destination to destination by bike. I never really had a car, so bike was the only way for me to, you know, as a teenager, if I wanted to go see my friends, I hopped on my bike to go see them. University, that was my mode of transit, was my bike. And then once I moved back to Sarnia, I actually started getting into, I did a few triathlons and got more into like training on a bike versus a commuter bike. And I've just always loved it. I call the bike is my church. It's unless it's a cold, windy, rainy
day.
There's
one I haven't heard.
Yeah, I say.
You still ride your bicycle right now?
No,
because I saw a gentleman today on a bicycle, like in the gear and everything, and I'm like, good for you.
Yeah, no. I actually rode last night, but that was on my trainer in the basement.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So you still get your fix inside
in my virtual world, my Zwift world. But no, I love it, and it's an incredible community of people. So I had started in public health just with my passion for biking and whatnot, too. Many people have heard of Dick Felton, wonderful man who's done so much in this community. So at that point in time, like in my early years in public health, I joined Blue Water Trails Committee. And they were doing some incredible work around the Blue Water Trail system here. And that's when I started learning more about bike-friendly communities, Eleanor McMahon and Share the Road Cycling Coalition. And Sarnia, our community, had a long way to go. And I compare what had happened like 15 years ago to today and the active transportation plan that was presented and supported by Sarnia City Council last night, it almost brings tears to my eyes. Things don't change overnight, but now that I can see, like today, to be able to go out on my bike and bike, you can literally bike on a bike lane all the way from Murphy Road to Mandaman, all along Lakeshore Road. It's absolutely incredible. And just the network of trails and what they're going to do. So that was where it kind of started. And then we got some grant funding and did some great work with Bike Friendly Lambton, trying to kind of build cycling, more like city biking in this community. Yeah. And then it was actually...
Well, because we were kind of like behind the times, weren't we, with having bike lanes and
way
stuff.
Way behind.
And I got a way behind. And, you know, I've seen different, like you probably know, Ben Prince.
Yes.
And, you know, he's quite the advocate for
it as
well.
Yeah, the great work they're doing.
Yeah. And I have to say, in the beginning of it all, as a driver, I was like, come on. Like, what happened to just the old days of riding on the side of the road and behaving improperly? And, but it's that educational side of it. Not that it was against it. I just I didn't understand it. But like, why do we have to go this far? And then I think like a lot of people, it was like, why are we spending money on that? Shouldn't we be spending money on this over here? And but I see it. I really see it more now. Like, and I'm glad that I kept an eye on it, so to speak, from afar. And then I go, okay. Like even coming up here, I'm coming up Colburn Road, and I'm very conscious now. I don't go over into that lane until I'm past the green part. Maybe I cheat a little at the end sometimes, but you know what I mean? And it's that it's like a roundabout, learning how to use it and everything, right?
But
you
know? I'm both a driver and I'm a bicyclist.
Yeah.
And I find there's nothing that's more annoying in this city when we have all these four-lane roads, and you've got, at the last minute, you're driving, and of course, everyone does what they want to do, but the last minute, you see a cyclist, and now suddenly I have to move into the next lane. I can't get past them. With bike lanes, I know where the cyclist belongs. I know where I belong. And I don't have to do those last minute lane shifting and all those things because they've got their designated space. And traffic is actually flowing better. And what's really cool is typically homes along bike routes, the property value increases significantly. It was the same with the trail system. And if you look back at the history of the Howard Watson Trail, there were people that fought changing the rail trail into a trail system. They were like, not in my backyard. NIMBYism always creeps up.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, some of the homes with the highest property values in our community are the ones out on Blackwell and whatnot that back onto the Howard Watson Trail, and they'll even promote them as having trail access.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Well, it's and I think there's still a little ways to go with that here based on it. She's like, we're going to get this done here.
We'll get there. Maybe not in my lifetime, but we're gradually getting there.
Oh, but it's good, right? We have to keep changing and adapting and looking back to, like, you know, maybe we didn't get it right the first time, or maybe we could learn from, didn't somebody from council go to...
They talked about going to the Netherlands, and then that didn't happen. But then I think
George was going to go.
And then they brought a couple that are what are they called? I forget what they're called, but they're like the cycling ambassadors of the world, and they're based out of Holland. So they brought them here.
Oh, okay.
To connect with a group of people. So I think it was from that work that a gentleman by the name of Ken McAlpine, who I'd never heard of before, which is so funny.
I interviewed him years ago.
Yeah, we joke about this all the time. He had this idea of having a Grand Fondo, and I'm not sure if it was Vicky Prail or somebody that he had met with. People said to him, you have to talk to Anita Trussler.
Oh, nice.
So we met for coffee, and that's how we always say. I think that's how our documentary for the Grand Fondo is like. It all started in a coffee shop and literally pitched this idea. And in the back of my mind, I had met several people over the years who had, you know, these aspirations of having some kind of a cycling event, but never really had the follow through. So I literally sat down with Ken thinking, oh, great. What, here we go again, right? Here's another pitch. But wow, his vision and what has become of the Blue Water International Grand Fondo. And not just the Grand Fondo, but in the last 2 or 3 years, it's evolved into the Youth Spokes Program, where we're building Cycling Without Age, which is an incredible program, partnering with the long-term care homes and retirement homes, which is just magical. And of course, all of the funding going to palliative care education in our community. The privilege of working with Dr. Glenn Madison and his lovely wife, Monique, who's also a palliative care physician. It's been great. So we're going into, I want to say, our 7th or is it our 8th Grand Fondo this year?
Yeah. And it's been very impactful on so many. And that was another one, too. I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. This is a big event coming to Sarnia. we like big events around here. I didn't really know how deep that went, you know.
You know, I have to invite you to come out. Then one Wednesday night, you need to come out.
Oh boy.
To our midweek rides. Well, if it's not on your bike.
I don't have a bicycle.
If it's not on your bike, it can be motorcycle patrol. I know you have a motorcycle.
Oh, geez.
Or just to do a video. You would be amazed to see.
So I'd love to do that.
We have midweek rides, and registration is full every year.
Else, Blackwell Way?
We meet every Wednesday night, Blackwell and Blackwell.
Yeah.
And we have 150 people that come out, and we take them out in different cycling groups, and we teach them how to ride in groups, rules of the road, how to build your endurance, how to change your gears.
150 people decide to get on a bicycle, go out there, meet, and then have an adventure.
150 people registered. So I would say on our good nights, we have over 100 people. Not that
every
150
Wednesday?
People. Every Wednesday for 12 weeks.
Wow.
So it's a training program.
I had no idea.
Starts the middle of May, and it gets them training so that they're riding up to about 50K in time for the Grand Fondo. So if people want to do the 50-kilometer ride. Now, there's some elite fast groups that are training for the 150 that go out. But a lot of people say that. They couldn't do it.
I haven't been on a bicycle in so many years, and I'm not... I've mostly talked on a microphone in my life, so I didn't move the body.
And you did that well.
Right? Thanks very much. But my body might not agree with you. If somebody wants to start on that, like a bicycle, okay, there's an investment, obviously, like anything else. But do I have to spend $1,000 on a bicycle? Do I have to, like, how does one start?
Yeah, no, you can get a used road bike. A lot of people are, so some people will get a starter level road bike. And then after a couple of years, like, I think I really like this. I'm going to go to a higher end bike. I'm going to get a carbon fiber bike. Now I'm going to spend like $3,500 and sell my $800 bike. So there's always a cycle. And for me, I had my beginner bike. Kendall Ross now rides it, and I love it because she's tall. And that bike for me has so many memories. I couldn't sell it, but I wanted to see somebody else fall in love with it.
Right.
So now when I see that bike, it just brings me so much joy to see her riding on it. It was my very first Cervelo
bike.
But
I got to ride all the way from my house all the way out there too, and then I go
I know I love
back.
It yeah so we my yeah so that's what
oh,
we do.
Oh, come on, David, don't be so lazy.
But I have to say, David, I can appreciate, so some of the most pivotal volunteers we have in our Grand Fondo, especially the event, are the motorcycle crew. They are phenomenal. And even MS Bike Tour, I've done MS Bike Tour for over 10 years.
I've been invited to come out to the Grand Fondo before as one of the escorts, like some of the other motorcycle groups.
It's just amazing.
I think it's the same weekend as Captain Kid Days.
Oh, yeah, it's always August, long weekend.
So I've just never been able to make it out. So, but you never know. I might surprise you one of these. But that would be fun.
Yeah.
Jennifer and I could come out. She'd bring her motorcycle too. We don't need an excuse to ride a motorcycle, but we're always looking for one.
Yeah, I know. Right? He goes on some really exciting tours.
So that's great, you know, and that's so everything we've talked about here with Anita Tressler is linked into the community somehow.
I love this community.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear the voice of someone like yourself, because, like, you just go out and do it. Like I said, you're a doer, and you just like to make it happen. You're not looking for any accolades or anything like that. You know, I know when I reached out to you for this, I know you well enough to know you're going, oh, I don't know if I want to be in front of a camera or something like that, right?
You know, my response to my son was, Dave is such a good guy, I couldn't say no, because you did so much for us through Age Friendly to really give a lot of in-kind support.
That's really
how
we connected.
You do so much for the community,
well,
right?
Well, thanks. I've lived here all my life. I've never left. I went away for a summer, but that was fun.
Yeah.
But I had every intention of coming back, and I think, you know, I got it from my parents. You know, where is it up here and everything? There's just such a uniqueness about Sarnia. I say Sarnia, Lambton County.
Yeah.
I've learned to say Lambton County, not Sarnia Lambton. I used to say Sarnia Lambton all the time. Some people, but it's Lambton County. And every show it comes up, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on. This community knows how to come together and help each other.
Oh my gosh!
And even the ones that don't like each other help each other.
Yeah.
Right. What? There's like the world, and then there's Sarnia. What do you think it is that makes us so unique here in Lambton County?
You know what I love about Sarnia? Our community? I think we're just the right size. Mm. So even in my work, it's so easy for, like, I thrive on partnership and collaboration.
Yes, you
and,
do.
And relationship building. And it's so easy to do here, because when I even think of the health system, we have one hospital group. We don't have three or four different hospitals. I look at my partners in the GTA. You have to work with so many different people across boundaries. Almost every organization that supports, like works here in Lambton County, works for Lambton County as their boundary. So we have incredible relationships with St. Clair Child and Youth and the amazing mm-hmm. work they're doing, CMHA, Blue Water Health. Like I mean, I can't go on and on.
We've got a helicopter pad here now.
I know, which
That's
is amazing.
Amazing.
And I look back, like I'm involved, like something else I'm very passionate about is Noelle's Gift. I'm very involved with Noelle's Gift as well. Noelle actually used to come to my fitness classes when I was, or to some of mine, but all the fitness classes at Good Life when I used to teach there. And to talk about community, like when I think of some community moments that I'll never forget, when that candlelight vigil for Noelle on an extremely cold, a night almost like tonight, winter's night, mm-hmm. and it was like a complete city block wide where everyone came together to support that family. And I look at the ongoing support today of how that our community continues to give to Noelle's Gift so that money can be funneled right back through the school system into mm-hmm. children mm-hmm. In need
millions,
in our community.
Millions
of dollars. and so many other causes. I mean, we could talk about the hospice. We could talk about the Blue Water Health Foundation, Sarnia Community Foundation. Our mm-hmm. community is an amazing community. Our galas all sell out. Look at the Imperial Theater and their 50-50 draws and what that has done for the community.
I know, right?
I think that's, I just love this community for that. And maybe it's because we stay and play here again.
Yeah, you know,
not many people here take off every weekend to go to a cottage.
No,
some people
right.
may have a cottage way up north that they go to.
Well, like, say, even a theater, you don't have to go. Like, don't get me wrong, Grand Bend's wonderful, Toronto's wonderful, but right downtown Sarnia.
Exactly. And Sarnia, the other thing I love,
top notch performances.
I love my beer too. I am a Mug Club member, but what I love is here in Sarnia, I can bike. I can bike to Imperial Theater. I can go on the trail and bike and go have a couple beers.
And who would have thought we'd have, like, when we got one, like, we got Refined Fool, and we were like, wow.
I know.
And now we've got, like, I don't know, four or five.
Yeah.
And then not much further from us, there's some more, right?
So Yeah. So I think that's why I love it. And I think everyone needs to leave Sarnia for a little bit to come back to really appreciate what we have here. Mm-hmm. It's a great place for recreation.
I like to travel, you know, but
me too.
And just been doing more and more as of late, but my dad always said, why would you want to go anywhere else?
Yeah.
What do we got right? Okay, so it's cold for a few months out of the year, so get out and shovel the snow then. What's the big deal? That's just the way he was, right?
Yeah.
And he would even say, like, okay, you want to go there? And he'd take a picture, but send me a postcard. They make really nice postcards with the picture on it. Well, okay, you can appreciate it. It's not the same way as standing in front of the
and pyramids tasting the food of a different culture. I love travel too.
They used to go to Florida, him and his wife, and he would come back for like a couple of months in like February to March.
Oh, he would.
He wanted to shovel the snow.
Wow. See, my retirement plan is not
like,
good
winter. Good for you, Dad.
Yeah. No. I don't. Nights like tonight,
no way.
I don't enjoy this.
Yeah, I should have. I don't know why I'm doing these interviews. Yeah. I should be taking a break from
Minus 29 wind chill tonight.
But thanks for everything you've done in our community. And it's people like yourself who do connect and collaborate. I know that's a big word in your vocabulary. So, okay, well, who your connector as well? Yeah. Who can I collaborate with? Who can we work with? Like-minded people, and you've made it work. Like, and I know not all on your own.
No, but, with people like you.
But you are a force.
Yeah, I mean, look, we came together, and I think we sat together to talk about how do we move an age-friendly action plan forward. Way back when the city of Sarnia. And I look now to the new Sarnia Lambton OHT, like age-friendly is an entire, it's no longer a group of people. It's now kind of a foundation for how you do things. It's a framework. Age-friendly
Other cities
is now a framework.
Are looking at us now.
Yeah, it's incredible. Saying, and again,
and that's how we really first got connected.
It is how we got connected. Yeah, because you were on the communications committee.
Yeah, that's
and,
right. And that's been quite a journey too with the age-friendly. And there were a lot of obstacles there. You know, because it was, money was a big part of it.
Yeah.
But how do you think we got through all of that with the challenges at Age Friendly Sarnia?
You know what? I think grant funding. So I remember when I first started working, even in physical activity, I say had $1,000 budget within my program that was allocated for me to change population health across all of Lambton County related to physical activity. I'm like, that's not going to happen. So that's where I got into a lot of cycling education stuff too. I just looked for grants. What can I do? Where can we bring money in? Because then I can do something. So that was Age Friendly. We brought in, I think, over the course of time since we originally had that Age Friendly Sarnia Action Plan endorsed by City Council, from then until now, we've brought in close to $1 million in grants.
I know.
Because the province sees we have an aging population. It's our best interest to make sure we have the supports available for individuals. Mm-hmm. And Sarnia, all of Lambton County, has an older than average population than the rest of Ontario. So I think we've come a long way and done some really cool, innovative stuff. But yeah, that's why you always—I mean, you got to innovate. You can't just say this is all I have. To me, it's like,
stay relevant,
let's
right?
do it differently. If this isn't working, what other options do we have?
So. Are we a retirement community, Anita?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Why do you say that? Because I know there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people watching, and I've had the conversation. Go, no, we're not. But you give your.
I would say we're a nice place to retire, but I think we've become more. I think at one time we were getting that label of a retirement community, but then I think with the pandemic we became a great community to live, and a lot of people who finally had the means to work remote said, "Why would I be in Toronto?" And a lot of people made a mass exodus from Toronto, and we saw a lot of people moving here. And I've met several people who are not retired, but who moved here because, again, the golf course is 5 minutes away. My boat, I can hop on my bike and I'm on my boat at the marina in 10 minutes. I think, you know, the access to the waterfront, we have relatives that come here that just can't believe it. Our lake isn't a little cottage lake. It's like an ocean.
Right.
It's incredible about blue waterland and what we have to offer. So,
did you know you could take China and put it in Lake Huron? And there'd still be water around it.
Yeah, it's like the Netherlands. I think you could put the Netherlands more than 2.5 times in Lake Huron. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, to some extent, we have an older population, and we are we're no longer the most affordable place to retire. I think Elliott Lake and some of those other places might still be up there. But I am seeing a bit of an evolution to other people moving here as well, more just because quality of life. And if you were to ask my husband, he would say, we both say, in our careers, if we wanted to go further in our careers and really excel, we would probably be in Toronto. But then that would have come with the expense of quality of life, of the rat race of commuting, the level of stress, the cost of living. And so we both agreed that this was a better place for us. Mm-hmm. And we both love what we do in our work, but we have just such incredible work-life balance and relationships with people.
Are your boys connected the same way you are in the community? Not the same way, but are they community oriented? Have you instilled that in them, or you hope that you have, or are they just kind of figuring that out on their own?
Yeah, I think they're kind of figuring it out. I think they're community oriented in that they get involved in teams and whatnot. My son actually moved to Burlington, and I think they're, you know, I think both my kids want to live in a bigger city, which is what I kind of wanted to do too, just to get a taste of it.
Sure.
But I think it's once you get to that point in time where maybe you're looking at anchoring your roots, finding your forever home, raising a family, that you rethink that. And you look at, you know, do I want to be in a car an hour and a half a day driving to work? Or do I want to be somewhere?
I want to be in it 15 minutes.
Exactly, exactly. So I think once they anchor their roots, I think they're newer to their communities, but certainly, you know, signed up for hockey teams and baseball teams and stuff like that. Both of them have given back and volunteered with the Grand Fondo over the years in that event when they were here, which was great. And yeah, I would hope that that's something that they'll do as they get older. I think that in those years when I was first starting my career, I guess back then I was even like trying to get onto a board just to get some experience. But yeah, I think that they'll do that as they, and both of them are in a very different kind of career. My career is public health. They're both very much in business and finance. But it's fun to watch them grow and evolve. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. We could sit here for hours.
I know. I was worried. How are we going to talk for this long?
Everybody says, oh, I don't have an hour. Like, you know, we're not going to get through that. But, and I think this is overdue for you and I. Like, I know we've sat at meetings.
Yeah.
And we might have had the pre and the quick post, like, you know, you're always saying, how's Jennifer? Or I watch your, you know, what you're doing and stuff. But we haven't been really able to do this without the rush to the next meeting, and I've been looking forward to this for some time.
This is awesome.
And I was just like, I got to get a hold of her. I have a list, right? Like, I go through my list and I cross off, and I was really looking forward to that. So thank you so much for all
welcome.
You do.
And I've really enjoyed this,
And for being a friend too, and not just to me, but I know I would consider you a friend to the community because, no, it's serious. You're genuine. You're genuine, and that's all I can say right there. I'll just leave it. You're just genuine, so thanks.
Thank
so
you,
much
Dave. And you know, I enjoyed this more than I thought I would. It's been just catching up with an old friend is what it really felt like. So I appreciate that.
Right on. Thanks to all of you for watching, and great story here with Anita. So, click the share button. You can click the like and the love. We want that. But I always say the share button is the most important button, so you can share Anita's story and everybody else that I talk to here on the show. But for now, that's all the time I got for you this week. Have a great week and an even better weekend. We will see you next time right here in the show. Bye-bye for now.
See you later.
Let's do it.